What's up, people? It's that time again. WGN, let's join the two friends, Jason Whiteside and Rich Lenkoff, in a legal face-off. Hear the knowledge they got. Legal point and counterpoint, Jay, you know the drill. From sports to Hollywood and the politics world. Not forgetting current events that occur. Plus a couple jabs here and there. Yeah. Airman, listen on WGNplus.com. Airman, listen on WGNplus.com. And join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter, or send us an email with questions, we hear ya. Yeah, one love, you know, the lawyers in the house.
We have to start this show. Donald Trump back in the news. He has some accusers and possible representation for famous attorney Gloria Allred, who joins us now on WGN Plus.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Gloria, you're a noted attorney in California, known the world over, of course. You're the author of Fight Back and Win, and you've been on this show before talking about a variety of subjects, including your representation in the Bill Cosby case of some of Bill Cosby's accusers. We want to talk to you today about your representation of at least one female who has alleged some impropriety by Republican nominee for president Donald Trump. Could you tell us about that, please?
Yes, absolutely. And that's Summer Zervos. And I did do a press conference with Summer last week. Summer is a young woman who was formerly a candidate on The Apprentice television show, and that she obviously then came into contact with Donald Trump. And that turned out to be a situation where she alleges that after she was no longer on The Apprentice, having been fired from The Apprentice, she still had, you know, a good positive view of Donald Trump. But when she went to see him in New York, essentially to talk about potential employment with, one of the Trump companies, he kissed her, is what her claim is, in his office, and also indicate that's without her consent on the lips. And then she alleges that he said he would be coming to Los Angeles and wanted to get together with her, when in fact he did come to the Los Angeles area because she resides in Southern California. Arrangements were made for dinner. And she was supposed to go to the Beverly Hills Hotel, and she expected that they would be going to a restaurant there. Instead, she was taken to his bungalow at the hotel, and she alleges that once inside the bungalow, that he grabbed her, that he kissed her, again, not what she expected, not what she was there for, that he touched her breast, that he wanted her to go into the bedroom with him. She did not want to go into the bedroom to watch, and she alleges that he said to watch the telly-telly, meaning the television. She also claimed that he wanted to know, well, then what was she there for? And she said, well, for dinner, that they had room service, that they did share a club sandwich. It was very upsetting to her because it's not what she was there for, as I said. And later, after it all ended and she left, she thought maybe for Mr. Trump that was just kind of a one-time thing, that he would be embarrassed by his own conduct, and she wanted him to apologize to her. She wanted to confront him and have him apologize and basically clear the air. So she did contact his office, secretary, sent emails. They never did get together. Then came the Access Hollywood tapes that were released, what we call the Billy Bush on the bus tapes, where we hear Mr. Trump engaging in very sexist, disgusting, crude, vulgar language about wherein he alleges that he grabs women by the crotch area. He uses the P word, that he used the B word to describe women, the T word, for their breasts, and that was very upsetting to her. And then compounding that was his denying in the debate with Hillary Rodham Clinton that in fact he had ever engaged in that type of conduct. That was too much for her because she then realized this is about character. This isn't a one-time situation. There and other women started coming out you know, alleging that he had done something similar to them. So that's when she decided that she needed to come forward. She did come forward last week. She's been attacked since then by Mr. Trump and his supporters.
Let's talk about that point for a second.
Brave.
Let's talk about that point, because Trump, who obviously tonight will be in the third and final debate before the election here in a couple of weeks, has, as you said, come out firing against all of his accusers. We've heard him say that, you know, for example, he wouldn't have done what he alleged to do on the plane because of the way that one individual looked. He said about your client, it never happened. He also, you know, questioned why it took so long for her to come forward. Now, you're one of the most prominent women's rights attorneys in the United States, as Donald Trump would say, anywhere in the world, probably. Could you talk about why it did take your client some time to come forward, and generally, having represented, you know, over the course of over 30 years, many victims of sexual abuse, why it takes women, you know, sometimes a while to come forward?
Well, that's a great question, and it's very understandable, because often they fear retaliation by the person whom they allege assaulted them, the predator, and they're concerned that that they will not be believed, that in fact they will be threatened or that they will be attacked unfairly by someone who is rich, powerful, famous, and has a lot of supporters, and that, you know, fear is essentially the weapon that keeps women down and in their place, which some people would like to be as subordinated to men. But what's changed now is women are breaking their silence. They're not willing to suffer in silence. They are becoming empowered. They found their voice. They want to speak what they say is their truth. And so that is helping to make certain public figures accountable for any injustice that they have inflicted on women. It does take a great deal of courage. There are risks, but women are wanting to take those risks if they think that that will help to make the wrongdoer accountable, and if they think that that will help to get the truth out about him.
World-renowned attorney Gloria Allred joining us on Legal Face-Off. Gloria, discuss, if you can, John Barry, who is your client's cousin, who released a statement expressing shock at Ms. Zervos's allegations, saying that Ms. Zervos had viewed Trump as an inspiration and praise the good things he's done for her in his life. Trump and his surrogates, I saw Rudy Giuliani, for example, quote Mr. Barry as support for Trump's theory that this did not happen. Could you speak to, tell us about John Barry?
Absolutely. Well, with regard to Mr. Barry, who's Summer's cousin, and his statements about her, Summer doesn't wish to fracture further family relationships and cause an even wider rift. But his own words in texts that he sent to Summer were we released at a press conference on Sunday. And his own words in the text reveal that he considers himself a, quote, loser, end quote. And we think that they speak for themselves.
Gloria, shifting gears, still talking about Trump. Shifting gears, though, you've also called on Mark Burnett, who is the producer of The Apprentice, to release the alleged tapes involving Donald Trump using the N-word. Of course, this hasn't been verified. It hasn't been substantiated. But many sources have come out and said that there does exist a tape from Mr. Trump on The Apprentice using the N-word, possibly using some other, difficult language, unflattering language. Yet there is a confidentiality agreement. There was talk of a $5 million penalty if one of the contestants violates that agreement. There was a GoFundMe page started to pay that penalty. You came out this week and called for Mark Burnett to release that tape, correct?
Well, yes, exactly. Release the tapes. The question is, what do they have to hide? Now, what I proposed is the following. Mr. Burnett has been saying that you know, there are contractual reasons why they cannot be released. And, you know, having to do with the artist and so forth. Well, all I'm saying, I would love to have a meeting with Mr. Burnett and examine the contracts and the language, determine whether I think that, in fact, they can't release those tapes. Or in the alternative, if he wouldn't want to, you know, show those to me, then I suggested, well, how about three retired judges from the L.A. County Superior Court who could review them in camera, meaning, you know, in a confidential setting, and then disclose to the public, are there really legal reasons, contractual reasons, why they cannot be released? We know that, certain segments of The Apprentice are licensed to media outlets. So, you know, what do they have to hide? What does Mr. Trump have to hide? Why wouldn't he agree to the raw footage being released or the unedited footage being released or at least transcripts? And I think the public has a right to know. I think there's a civic duty here for, you know, we want an informed electorate. We want people to know everything, and then they can make the right decision from their own point of view about who they should vote for the most important and highest office in the land, the presidency of the United States.
Gloria, we'll let you out of here on this question. We thank you for joining us, of course, on Legal Faceoff. Where does Summer Zervos go from here? Will you be filing a lawsuit against Donald Trump?
Well, there are no plans for Summer to file a lawsuit against Donald Trump. She never did it. She could have done it in the past. She didn't. She has no plans to do it now. I don't know if that would change or not in the future. But I do anticipate that more women will be coming forward. So for Donald Trump, it's not going to be over anytime soon.
Gloria Allred, whose most recent book is Fight Back and Win, My 30-Year Fight Against Injustice and How You Can Win Your Own Battles, can be reached on GloriaAllred.com. Thank you very much for joining us. We love having you on Legal Faceoff on WGN Plus.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
The following information is considered advertising material. You're listening to Rich Lenkoff on Legal Faceoff. Rich is a partner at Bryce Downey & Lenkoff and handles workers' compensation, general liability, and entertainment law. He has been selected to the 2012 Illinois Super Lawyer List and has been named leading lawyer from 2012 through 2016. Rich has been honored as one of the 50 most influential people in workers' compensation by SEAK Incorporated and is a frequent lecturer for many national organizations. Bryce Downey & Lenkoff is a full-service law firm in Illinois and Indiana. Their clients enjoy a hand-picked team of attorneys supported by a world-class staff. Among their other practice areas are business litigation, construction, employment law, insurance coverage, intellectual property, and professional liability. To contact Rich and to learn more about Bryce Downey & Lenkoff, visit bdlfirm.com/WGN.
Back to the phones we go. We talked to a partner at Patterson Law Firm, Christy Brown, here in Chicago, and Denny Hastert, the sex abuse victim story back in the news. So she joins us now on Legal Faceoff. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Christy, thanks for joining us. We follow the Denny Hastert story very closely here on Legal Faceoff. For our listeners, just as a refresher, Hastert is the former Speaker of the House, currently serving a 15-month sentence in federal prison in Minnesota for violating banking laws when he was making payments to a man referred to as Individual A. Hastert had an agreement where he would pay him $3.5 million, I believe was the sum, and he paid him $1.7 million over four years, beginning in 2010, and then stopped paying him when federal agents confronted him about his cash withdrawals. Now you're representing this individual seeking the remaining $1.8 million. Is that all accurate so far?
That's correct.
So there was a hearing last week on Friday in Kendall County here in Illinois in which this issue, this breach of contract issue, was raised. And Judge Robert Pillmer has not yet ruled. He's going to rule at the end of November. But basically, the issue that's in dispute right now, the subject of this lawsuit, is whether the contract is valid and whether, if it is valid, your client is owed the remainder of the terms of the agreement. Your position is, number one, that the contract is valid. It doesn't violate public policy, correct? Can you explain why that is, or why do you feel that way?
That's correct. The argument that Mr. Hassert's lawyers raised is that the contract was one for extortion, essentially, and therefore, you know, against the public policy of our country. The contract was not one for extortion. It was an agreement to compensate my client for the injuries he suffered at the hands of Mr. Hassert. And at no time did my client threaten Mr. Hassert or try to intimidate or coerce him in any way. And that's what makes this contract not one of extortion.
How old was your client when the agreement was entered into?
When the agreement was entered into, he was an adult.
Okay. So it's your position that this was a consensual agreement between two parties where there was, you know, an offer and acceptance, consideration to be paid, and this is just a standard contract that should be abided by Denny Hassert and should be enforced by the court, correct?
Correct.
Now, the defendant said that this violated public policy because they cited a famous case involving Michael Jordan. A state appeals court in 2007 said that the deal whereby Michael Jordan would pay $5 million if this woman remained silent about a child that Michael Jordan allegedly fathered, the court ruled that that deal was unenforceable because the woman had misled Michael Jordan about the certainty of paternity. And the court said that contracts for silence are extortionate and against public policy. But you feel that that case is distinguishable from your client's case, correct?
That's correct. In that case, the woman actually knew when she requested the $5 million and requested enforcement of that agreement that she was not carrying Michael Jordan's child, that it wasn't possible that the child she was carrying was his. And yet she represented to him that it was. And so the court in that case really found that she fraudulently induced Michael Jordan into agreeing to pay $5 million. He would have been paying it for child support, not specifically as hush money, and that if no child support was owed and if she knew there was no child support owed, then all she was trying to do was extort him. In my client's situation, this is an agreement to compensate him for injuries, and it contains a confidentiality agreement with it. But the primary purpose of the contract is to compensate my client for his injuries. And so it wasn't an extortionate contract. There were no threats of public disclosure on my client's part. And both the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office reached the same conclusion.
All right, Christy, was this an agreement that they had in writing between Denny Hassert and Individual A?
No, it was not. Mr. Hassert specifically requested no writing, no evidence of the agreement be documented at all.
Is there any sort of evidence that you can point to that this agreement existed between them other than the payments?
He's admitted it.
Yeah, Hassert is not denying that there was a contract.
There's
right?
never been any point where Correct. He's denied that it existed, right?
Initially, he claimed to the FBI that my client was trying to extort him based on false accusations, but it wasn't very long before he admitted that he had, in fact, entered into this agreement with my client.
So let's assume for a second that the judge finds that the contract is valid, that there was, in fact, a valid contract between two parties, that it was not against public policy. It is distinguishable from the Michael Jordan case. The next question appears to be whether your client, whether the contract now is not enforceable or because your client is the one who broke the agreement by speaking to the FBI. That's the other argument that the defense attorney made in the hearing. What's your response to that?
Our response to that argument is that it was actually Dennis Hassert who spoke to the FBI first and disclosed the existence of the agreement. At that point, my client essentially could not continue to keep it quiet because he had to answer the FBI's questions. But Dennis Hassert himself, both by violating banking regulations in the way that he withdrew the money and by disclosing the agreement to the government, rendered that performance by my client basically impossible at that point.
Now, let's assume that the judge finds in your client's favor in November or beforehand. Is Denny Hassert now judgment-proof? Does he have money left? Obviously, he's probably spent a lot of his money on attorney fees, defending himself. How do you plan on collecting this balance if the judge rules in your favor?
We don't believe at this time that he is judgment-proof. I don't think that all of his assets have been used, but that's something that we'll have to explore in the event that we get a judgment.
How's your client? We'll let you go with this question, Christy. We appreciate you joining us. How's your client doing now? Obviously, you know, went through an incredible amount of trauma, was one of the many victims of Denny Hastert. You know, we all feel on this show that it's a shame that Denny Hastert was not able to be prosecuted for, you know, his sexual crimes and is only getting a slap on the wrist for violating bank laws. How's your client doing today?
Well, like any abuse victim, my client struggles with the impact of the abuse. And obviously, when there's a lot of publicity about the case, that brings it all up again. And he hasn't been able to attain that closure he would desire to attain. So I think if we can get this case to judgment and get him some compensation, that he'll achieve some closure, and hopefully that will help him.
That's Christy Brown. She's a partner at Patterson Law Firm here in Chicago. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Whiteside & Goldberg Limited is a law firm that specializes in representing injured people in all types of accidents. Whether it be an auto accident, a workplace accident, medical malpractice, construction accident, or slip and fall, the attorneys at Whiteside & Goldberg have a combined 30-plus years of legal experience to represent you. We offer a free consultation and have two offices to serve you throughout the Chicagoland area. If you or someone you know have been injured and you have questions regarding your rights, feel free to contact the law firm of Whiteside & Goldberg today for a free consultation. You can call us at 312-334-6875. And for more information, visit our website at wglawgroup.com.
Joining us now on Legal Face-Off on WGN Plus, she's a partner in the Trust and Estates Group at Levenfeld Perlstein. She joins us now, Sherry Warsh, who had a personal situation about 4 years ago when her son was in an emergency in college and HIPAA blocked her right to obtain medical info. She joins us now on WGN. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning.
Hey, Sherry. So, we want to pick up on the story that got a little bit of attention. You are actually a Trust and Estates attorney, and one October, when your 18-year-old son was at the University of Michigan, you got a call when you were stepping out of the shower. This was from your son's college roommate, and he told you that your son, who was, you know, at the University of Michigan, some 300 miles away, was being rushed to the hospital, to an emergency room, with severe, unrelenting chest pain. First of all, how did you feel when you got that call? As a father myself, I could imagine that you were obviously scared, you were concerned, you were shocked.
Yes, I was beside myself. I was just coming out of the shower, and I was very, very nervous and very scared about his medical condition.
All right, so understandably, as any parent would, you called, being far away, being in Illinois, and your son being in Ann Arbor, you called the hospital to find out what was going on. You talked to the nurse, and what did the nurse tell you when you said, what was wrong with my son or what was going on with my son?
Well, I actually asked, can I please speak with the doctor? And her answer was, your son's 18, isn't he? And I said yes, and they said that I could not talk to the doctor.
So the nurse was referencing HIPAA, the privacy rule of the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, or HIPAA, which basically means that once your child becomes an adult, turns 18, that you don't have the right to that child, to your own child's medical information without their consent, correct?
That is correct.
And that's, in fact, what happened to you. The nurse told you that she could not let you speak to your son because he did not provide consent to do so. Obviously, in that stage, he could not provide consent. So that was quite a dilemma, I imagine.
Yes. Part of it was that they told me I could talk to my son, but I couldn't talk to a doctor. And my son was so scared and in so much pain, he really couldn't let me know anything.
Sure. Were you able to get around it at that time, or how did you get around it, or what did you do?
No, my in-laws live an hour away. So my in-laws went and they went to the hospital. That was the only way I could get around it.
So unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, under HIPAA, which, you know, a lot of our listeners, I think, are marginally aware of, but maybe not to this extent. Under HIPAA, as a parent, you really don't have any more right to obtain medical information on your adult age child than any other stranger has on the street, or that you would have about any other stranger on the street. Isn't that
true?
And that's true, even though under the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, even if your child, your adult child, is still on your health care plan, which was, you know, a big provision of the Affordable Care Act, that's HIPAA still overrules or overrides that provision, correct?
Yes, because my son is still on our health care, but I did not have any rights to his information.
Amazing. Well, thankfully, as you've told us, your child is your son is doing great. He is, I presume, a University of Michigan grad at this point.
Yes, he is.
Excellent. So he's doing well. So let's turn to what our listeners can do when, you know, to prevent this kind of situation. You are, ironically, a trust in the state's attorney. What do you recommend to your clients that they do to avoid not having access to their adult children's medical information and to prevent this kind of thing from happening to them?
On their child's 18th birthday, they need to have their child sign a power of attorney for health care. And depending on the state, they need to incorporate the HIPAA language within the power of attorney for health care.
Pretty straightforward language, right? Not something that is very complicated, but I bet most people aren't aware of this, and, you know, a lot of people don't even have that documentation completed.
Correct. And when you go to schools for orientation and high schools, no one talks about this document that's so important.
Okay, and what do you do in practical purposes, Sherry, when you have a, you know, an 18 or 19-year-old kid who's getting medical care? Where does this document go? I mean, they're obviously not going to, you know, carry it on them. Where does that document go? Does it get filed with the college?
No, you don't file it with the college. What happens is you keep it on your phone. So you would scan. I tell my clients, and I scan it to them. They keep it in their phone. So if they ever need it, they would have the ability to either send it by email or to fax it to either the medical provider or hospital or doctor.
And is the authorization all-encompassing? Does it allow you to have access to all of their healthcare information, including, you know, things like sexual activity or drugs, or can you, you know, take that out?
Well, you could take it out. Most of the time it's not taken out because you want it to basically be all encompassing.
Sure. Yeah, you don't want that stuff to be information that remains secret, I would imagine.
Correct, because if your child needs you in a bad situation, you want to be able to get that information.
That's Sherry War. She's a partner in the Trust and Estates Group at Levenfeld Perlstein. Thank you for joining us so much.
Thank you for having me.
And we finish the show like we always do on Legal Face Off, the Legal Grab Bag. Look who's in the studio. Look who just walked in the door.
Hello,
Brian
boys.
Watercott is here.
Hello,
all
boys.
All right, great. I wonder what the special occasion is. We'll find out later. Rich and Jason, Sam, all
uh-oh.
With you.
Sammy owes me money.
Money.
You're like the Grim Reaper
money.
For money.
Cha-ching. Seven topics
Donald
on the
Donald Trump of WGN.
Make WGN great again.
The seven topic rundown here.
Always seven.
We'll start with Rich. There's a pink drug that is stronger than heroin, but it's legal in most states.
Is it pink or is it called pink? Maybe it's called pink, but yeah, it's known
We're such
as
prolific drug users. No one knows what it
looks like. U47700, better known by Jason Whiteside as pink.
Yeah.
8 times stronger than heroin and is part of the ever-growing epidemic of opioids, both prescription and otherwise, in this country. And the big news is it's legal in all but 5 states. Recently, two 13-year-old boys in Park City, Utah, died within 48 hours of each other after overdosing on pink, which they purchased on the internet legally. It was delivered to their home. I mean, you know, it's the Amazon Prime of drugs, I guess. You could get it right to your home, really cheap. Cheaper than heroin, more powerful than heroin. So,
are you doing a commercial for Pink? That's what it sounds like.
Coming this fall. Where from Jason Whiteside dispensary.
From my dispensary over in Michigan and Randolph.
Coming to a bloodline
it's
in
cheaper,
your body.
Better, faster,
Pink.
Stronger.
No, but seriously, this is something you can get that anybody can order online?
Yeah, I mean...
Or is it one of those, like, you know, buy the pink pill, buy the blue pill from some shady place
well,
in
earlier I Googled
Canada.
Buy pink, and there was, I mean, nothing popped up except
yeah,
for all
Victoria's
these news
Secret.
Articles. But
all the pink, they're going to be, now they're drug dealers now, all of them.
And then Rich got lost.
Just find a woman on Michigan
in the
Avenue
worldwide web.
In a pink shirt, and you can...
Well,
you
no, some of us have kids
Speaking
that
of
are...
that, by the way, did you guys see the video? I mean, there's been, I don't know, millions of views of the father telling his son... that his mother died from a heroin overdose.
I didn't watch it because it's
Are you the only three people who haven't seen it?
I just didn't click on the link because it just seemed like it was
kinda,
a depressing video.
I don't
want to
suffer.
It's pretty heartbreaking. On the other hand, there's a lot of people who think it's a hoax. I mean, I haven't made up my mind. You would think that people aren't that low that they would create a hoax, but you know, there's a GoFundMe page. Initially, the father asked for $50,000. Now it's down to 100. I mean, you know, you could get lost in all the comments on this stuff, but it's pretty heartbreaking. If it's true, it's incredibly heartbreaking. I don't know that I would videotape that.
It's
a
really nice setup, right? I'm going to videotape me telling my kid that his mom died of heroin and then do a GoFundMe to help take care of the expenses.
I mean, it's a little, you know, it's a little suspicious. He said, of course, he did it to teach other people the heartbreak and loss that heroin addiction could
And also
could
the
have,
benefit, of a
benefit of a GoFundMe page, right?
Page that can arise
exactly.
out of it.
Well, no, there's a serious... I mean, with drugs and kids, there's a kid in my neighborhood who died at 19 years old. Dating my niece died of a drug overdose.
From what?
19
heroin?
Years old. Mixing Vicodin, vodka, and cocaine.
Yeah, I mean, listen,
just because you can get it.
Let's move on. Let's talk about something a little less
too depressing.
Yeah.
Well, it's true, man. It's scary.
I understand. We're sorry if you've lost anybody near any of that stuff. It's very, very sad. Let's move to Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who made news when she said that Colin Kaepernick's anthem protest was dumb and disrespectful. Now she's reconsidering.
Yeah, RBG continues to be a great source of... good stuff for our show, certainly. She has been more vocal than ever in her maybe final years here on the court. She criticized Colin Kaepernick, who we've covered on this show. Of course, he is the San Francisco 49er quarterback who initially sat, now is kneeling for the national anthem. Much Played criticized by many people, including RBG, who said it was dumb and disrespectful. Then she recanted. She said it was inappropriately dismissive and harsh.
The New York Times breaking a law to publish Trump's tax returns. What do you got on this, Jason?
Yeah, just like you said, Sam, they risked breaking the law. Apparently, there's a federal law that makes it illegal to publish an unauthorized tax return or return information. And as everyone knows, the New York Times broke a big story a couple weekends ago about how Trump claimed a $916 million loss so that he wouldn't have to pay. Well, he didn't do it, but as a repercussion of it. He did not have to pay federal taxes for up to 18 years. I don't know if he did, in fact, pay them, but that was how far forward he could carry a $916 million loss. So New York Times posted that tax return and came out with a story and got it from a 1995 New York State resident income tax return and also from a New Jersey income tax return. So I don't think there's been any lawsuits initiated.
I mean, it looks like they were risking breaking the law, but you know, no one I think will pursue it. If they did, they got New York Times presumably has plenty of deep pockets to defend that kind of thing.
A team of
lawyers in the face
of
the First Amendment. Yeah.
Will those numbers ever get out? All the numbers, or is this never going to be leaked? Like all of his tax returns. Any possibility?
It's
before the election.
It's really, really tough to get people's tax returns. I mean, Rich and I deal with it all the time. And I mean, you have to have an authorization signed. It has to go to the IRS, and then they have to release them. So unless it's dug up from an accountant's file that they get into, I mean, it's not coming from the IRS unless it's authorized to. So
I mean, I think he's tacitly admitted that he hasn't paid taxes and. You know, he said, I'm just being smart. So, I mean, I don't think that there'd be anything in the release of the taxes that at this point would be particularly surprising or damaging. I mean, he didn't pay taxes for...
No, the only thing that could probably be damaging is that he doesn't make as much money as he claims he does.
Right.
Well, they said in before the 1980s that the people didn't generally do that. Is there a reason that since the 80s this has become the thing to do for politicians?
Probably the tax laws just changed. They constantly change.
There's a high-stakes divorce case in McHenry County. Richard Stevenson once boasted that his wife would get nothing in their divorce, and that's because of the way that he organized his business holdings. Now this trial making a lot of moves here, a lot of noise in the area.
Yeah, this is massive. I didn't know that the Cancer Treatment Centers of America was this big of an outfit, but there's potentially tens of millions of dollars at stake, and they're trying to determine how much Stevenson's ex-wife, Alicia, will receive in monthly maintenance payments and all the other assets that they own. I think we've talked about it on the show before, but the lifestyle that they had was pretty lavish.
I mean, the big news is how long this has gone on, right? I mean, they separated 9 years ago, and she filed for divorce 7 years ago.
Anytime there's this much money at stake, I mean, the attorneys are just churning out the hours, billing this down.
How great for their attorneys.
And who's that billionaire hedge fund that we talked about on the show, too? He got a divorce here in Chicago.
That's like the biggest one in history.
Yeah, it just keeps going, too.
I should have been a lawyer. I did it all wrong.
Invented Cancer Treatment Centers of America.
It wouldn't be a legal face-off without some sort of a crime here, especially bribery in Chicago. All righty. Woo. Gary Solomon, his admission of guilt during a court appearance actually clears the way for the sentencing of Barbara Bird Bennett, but a bribery scandal in Chicago public schools.
Yeah. This is the Barbara Bird Bennett scandal. She was the former CEO of the Chicago public schools who was prosecuted for a variety of federal crimes, basically taking money for giving out contracts, including to this person, Gary Solomon, who was co-owner of Supes Academy. Supes Academy received a contract for CPS in exchange for, Barbara Bird Bennett was caught on tape saying, "I want money to go to the casino. I want my kids' child education or my college education paid."
Worth going to prison for.
Right. So now Solomon has finally pled guilty to a single count of wire fraud. He's not the big fish. He's just a conduit to get to, as you mentioned, Barbara Bird Bennett. So now she'll be sentenced and hopefully spend the rest of her days behind bars.
I'm sure this won't be an example here in the city of Chicago. More politicians to come.
So Chicago, I used to get done that way. Things used to get done that way. We all know that.
Yeah.
Russell Crowe has really, really upset Azalea Banks. She's accused the actor of assault and dropping a racial slur as he asked her to leave a party.
Yeah. Russell Crowe allegedly, according to Azalea Banks, was at a party with her. It was a party at her house, and things got out of hand. And she alleges that he put her in a bear hug, called the Beverly Hills Hotel security to take her off the property, and that while doing so, he used a variety of N-words along the way. That's according to TMZ. She has now filed a police report with the Beverly Hills Police Department, and they are investigating this. Russell Crowe has not been available for comment, according to TMZ, which is a source for LFO here. At least four guests at the gathering gave statements.
It's a secret source.
Yes, and it was, according to these people, it was Banks who was using racial slurs, not Russell Crowe. So, Russell Crowe, favorite movie there, Sam?
Gladiator.
Gladiator. Oh, yeah, it's so cliche.
I just saw that one with him and Ryan Gosling in it, though. They're pretty funny in
The Nice Guys?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
I like The Insider.
Actually, American Gangster.
Yeah, that's another good one.
The attorney that took down, what was his name? Denzel. Frank Lucas.
Yeah. Remember, wasn't Russell Crowe in the news? It was like a decade ago when he took the telephone and didn't he throw it at someone or bash someone in the head with it?
He did.
So does that, that'll come up, right?
I mean, 10 years ago is nothing.
Is there a statute of limitations for phone beatings?
Well, is there a lawsuit on this, or is this just...
No, it just happened. I mean, she...
Lots of griping and yelling.
There will probably
right
be a
lawsuit,
I would imagine, but the legal news is that she filed a police report.
Depends on who has more money. That's where the lawsuit will come.
She was also mocking his musical abilities. Remember, he was in that
oh, yeah,
that band, 40-odd pounds.
Are we allowed to say it was horrible? I hated it.
Jason can. I think it's I have no opinion on it.
Rich loves Russell Crowe music. Yes. Please flood his inbox with all the Russell Crowe music you can find.
Speaking of libel and defamation, do not say anything bad about our final story, Kim Kardashian, because literally there is not a day. I mean, you could Google Kim Kardashian lawsuit and keep our show on the air for the next 10 years. I mean, it's a nonstop, you know, gold mine for her attorneys.
Careful.
Yes.
So, as Rich was alluding to, the very talented,
I love the Kardashians.
The very talented, lots of skills, Kim Kardashian is taking legal action against her celebrity stalker.
Yeah, it was in the news of Vitaly Sadiq, who's an infamous celebrity prankster, had attacked, is it Gigi or Gigi Haddad?
Gigi.
A week before, and there was video of her elbowing him in the face, knocking him around, and then he came up behind Kardashian and grabbed her posterior.
He's so done it twice to her.
Yeah, he's
professional
quick,
stalker.
Very quick. Yeah, in and out. But she's
a title previously held by our very own Brian Watercutt.
Can we play The Price is Right here? Let's take a guess. How many million Twitter followers does Kim Kardashian West have? You
all
go
right,
first.
I'm going to start with 78 million.
78 million.
I have no, 55 million.
20.
48.5 million people care about what she does.
You know, I read that she loses, while she's been staying silent for the, you know, after the robbery and break-in, she's losing $1 million a month on not being on Twitter and Instagram and promoting products.
Right, because she types 140 characters out and gets like $100,000 for a product.
It's insane.
What? Is that true?
Yeah.
LeBron James does it?
Book her on Legal Face-Off.
Well, remember, I mean, TMZ had that with Scott Disick, where he was holding the product, and they saw that like he would hold like this cup, and then they would just Photoshop in whatever product it was on his Instagram account. It's crazy.
The fact that Scott Disick's name is so easily accessible to you is problematic. Not because of you, but, I mean, how much fame these other hangers-on have got.
I love all the Kardashians.
Yeah, you do.
Who was the first? I mean, it was Robert Kardashian, right? He's the first one that actually...
Bruce Jenner is the first Kardashian.
Well, but he's not technically it. Well, I guess he is a Kardashian, but...
Or Kendall Jenner now, but...
Who's the most talented Kardashian?
I'm going to say...
Lamar Odom.
Well, I think
he's not a Kardashian.
I think the Kardashian tree, though, is far
Jenner,
wider.
I mean, Bruce Jenner was obviously the most talented.
Kendall Jenner was the best athlete on Earth in 1976. When
Kendall Jenner? Caitlyn Jenner.
When he won the, or now she won the,
decathlon. 10 sports. He was the, dominated them all, but...
Not he, she.
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 Oh, he did then.
I was referencing the biological.
I'm so confused. Luckily, I have lawyers behind me.
Legal Face-Off.
That about does it. We'll see you in 2 weeks on WGN Plus.
The content of this broadcast has been prepared by Bryce Downey & Lenkoff, LLC, and Whiteside & Goldberg, Limited, for informational purposes. This information does not intend to create, and receipt of it does not constitute, a lawyer-client relationship. You should not act upon this information without seeking advice from a lawyer licensed in your own state. In considering prior results, please be aware that each matter is unique, and prior results are not necessarily representative of all matters of Bryce Downey & Lenkoff, LLC, and Whiteside & Goldberg, Limited. You should not rely on prior results to predict future success in similar matters. Please do not send or disclose to either firm confidential information or sensitive materials.